Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Well, text number 20, well, I don't know. Which one? 26. Mumukshavo Gaura Rupan Hitva Bhutapatin Ata Narayana Kalakshanta Bhajanti Yanasuyavaha Mumukshavo Gaura Rupan Hitva Bhutapatinata Narayana Kalakshanta Bhajanti Persons desiring liberation. Gora. Horrible, ghastly. Rupan. Forms like that. Itva. Rejecting. Bhutapatin. Demigods. Ato. For this reason. Narayano. The personality of Godhead. Kalaha. Plenary portions. Shantaha. All blissful. Bhajanti. Do worship. He. Certainly. Anasuyavaha. Not envious. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who is the original person of the Vishnu categories, expands himself in two different categories, namely integrated plenary portions and separated parts and parcels. The separated parts and parcels are the servitors, and the integrated plenary portions of Vishnu Tattva are the worshipful objects of service. All demigods who are empowered by the Supreme Lord are also separated parts and parcels. They do not belong to the category of Vishnu Tattva. The Vishnu Tattvas are living beings, equally as powerful as the original form of the personality of Godhead. And they display different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. The separated parts and parcels are powerful by limitation. They do not have unlimited power like the Vishnu Tattvas. Therefore, one should never classify the Vishnu Tattvas or the plenary portions of Narayan, the personality of Godhead, in the same category with the parts and parcels. If anyone does so, he at once becomes an offender by the name Pahashandi. In the age of Kali, many foolish persons commit such unlawful offenses and equalize the two categories. The separated parts and parcels have different positions in the estimation of material powers, and some of them are like Kala Bhairava, Shmasana Bhairava, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those in the lowest categories of the mode of darkness or ignorance. Other demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesha, and many similar deities are worshipped by men in the mode of passion, urged on by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, sattva guna, of material nature, worship only Vishnu tattva. Vishnu tattvas are represented by various names and forms, such as Narayana, Damodara, Vamana, Govinda, and Adhoksaja. The qualified brahmanas worship the Vishnu tattvas represented by the Shalagram Shila, and some of the higher castes like the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas also generally worship the Vishnu tattva. Highly qualified brahmanas, situated in the mode of goodness, have no grudges against the modes of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kala Bhairava and Mahakali. They know very well that these horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord, under different conditions. Yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods. And they concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu, because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life, but his worshipful deity, Brahma, could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and none else is called Muktipada, or the personality of Godhead, who can bestow upon us mukti, liberation. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated at the time of the annihilation of the material structure. They are themselves unable to get liberation. And what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees? The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only, and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason only that candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, although they have no disrespect for any of them. Mumukshavo Gora Rupan Hitva Bhutapatinata Narayana Kalakshanta Bhajanti Anasuyavaha. It may seem obvious to us that we should worship the Supreme Lord and not finite personalities. There's such a great difference between God and demigod. Therefore, Prabhupada didn't choose to call the demigods gods, just gods with a lower G. That wasn't different enough. There's such a difference between the infinite supreme soul and the finite souls. They're just tiny sparks. They cannot be equated with the whole. But this is the power of Maya, that we become so foolish under her influence that we start thinking that it's good to worship some infinitesimal small spark. What is it? Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivatai Samatvenaiva Viksheta Sapashandi Bhavedruvam. One who has a vision, false vision, that Brahma Rudra, Lord Brahma, the creator and maintainer of the universe, the chief of all the forefathers of the universal population, Prajapatipati, Pitamaha Maha. He's the grandfather of all the Manus, of Swayambhuva Manu, the first Manu. He's so great. but he's not God. Lord Shiva is transcendental. He's able to bestow liberation, but he's not God. Narayan is God. Krishna is the original God. Narayan is his expansion, and Narayan further expands into many, many forms and avatars, Chaturvyuha, and then in the material world, all these different incarnations, avatars. You can worship any one of these forms, any one of these avatars. That is acceptable. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness, who avoid the attractions of passion and ignorance, they worship Vishnu in one or other of his forms. But there's a condition here, anasuyavaha. There is, material goodness is usually contaminated by some traces of passion and ignorance. And by those contaminations, a person who is supposed to be in the mode of goodness actually is envious. Either competitive or actually malicious. One who is properly situated in goodness, in pure or almost pure goodness, who is a proper Brahman, should never be materially ambitious, greedy, competitive, that's mode of passion, or malicious, abusive. This is not the business of a Brahmana. This is the business of lower class people, to envy one another, to compete for material position, for power and domination, for prestige. This competition is not the proper attitude of a person in the mode of goodness. And certainly the influences of ignorance should not be there in a person who's actually a Brahmana. To be intolerant of the weaknesses and faults of others and to want to destroy them and discourage them because they're imperfect, because they maybe hamper your sense gratification. This is the influence of the mode of ignorance, to be inimical to anybody else, to consider anybody your enemy or a troublemaker or an antagonist, especially among Vaishnavas. We should not be rajasic and tamasic in our relationships with the other devotees. Prema, maitri, the attitude that must be or should be shown to all Vaishnavas is one of friendship. Friends can correct one another, but in the mood of friendship. If your god brothers become your competitors or your enemies, if you cannot tolerate your god brothers, if you envy them, that is Vaishnava aparad. Even if you don't say anything, even if you don't do anything, just to think like that is Vaishnava aparad. And what kind of bhajanam is that then? We're nominally worshipping Vishnu. We have given up demigod worship or Christian Jewish worship or Islam. We seek religion. We've given up our former religion and now we're worshipping Vishnu in the form of Krishna. But if we're still envious, then we're not really performing worship. We're performing puja. We're trying to do business with Vishnu like we do with everybody else. We're trying to manipulate God. You know, just like some of the prayers in the book of Psalms. Who is it? David or Solomon? David is the rishi of the book of Psalms. He's praying to God, smite my enemies, smash them, destroy them. Is that how we pray to Krishna? Is that our bhava? Then we should be, you know, maybe we should have a Bible class instead if that's our mood. Yeah, we want to learn how to smite our enemies. We should read the Bible. Not the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not about smiting enemies. We shouldn't have any enemies. The devotees, at least the devotees, I mean, we can make the Mayavad philosophy our enemy. Not the Mayavadis, but the Mayavad philosophy, all the mis- understandings. We can make that our target of our intolerance. But we should not be intolerant and envious of other Vaishnavas. What to speak of even innocent people? We should be kind to them. Innocent creatures. And Vaishnavas. We have no business feeling inimical toward them. Otherwise, our bhajana is degraded to mere puja. Better than nothing. Better than worshipping a demigod, but it's not real worship in the sense of bhajanam. Of course, we understand the difference between bhakti and puja. Prabhupada has discussed it. Puja is just formal, external worship. Bhajanam is done with love. Now, where are we on that spectrum? Are we materialists, or do we have love of God? And I think most of us have to answer we're somewhere in the middle. We're materialists graduating in the direction of love of God, but we haven't reached it yet. So material influence is still acting on us to some extent, each one of us. At least me. I'm struggling with all sorts of envy, greed, lust. I'm trying to subdue it. I'm trying to keep it under control. Because I know the aim of my life should be to the other end of the spectrum, to attain love of Krishna. But I haven't come that much near love of Krishna yet. So therefore, the tendencies to be intolerant, to consider others my enemies, this is still there. And I have to keep it under control. Just like other urges, the urges to go out and eat all sorts of garbage, whatever you see on the street, that urge should be controlled. Not just eat any garbage. Not just have sex with any person you see that looks attractive. Not just to indulge in all sorts of sense gratification without any self-restriction. No, we have to subdue our urges, regulate them. Allow some sense gratification, but within limits and according to the regulative principles. Same thing with our sleeping, eating, mating, and defending. So our defending tendency to identify someone as an enemy, on our radar scope, we sight an enemy, and we open up our guns ready to shoot. We have to be careful how we use that tendency. Just like the eating, sleeping, mating, defending, eating, sleeping, mating, at least most of us have to do some eating and sleeping. We all have to do some eating and sleeping. I was listening to a lecture of Prabhupada last night, a lecture of Prabhupada where he was talking about the six Goswamis. Nidrahara Vihara Vijita. What's the word before Vijita? What's the word? Yeah, anyway, they controlled their urges of sleeping, of eating. But it doesn't mean that they never slept. Prabhupada said they did sleep. They slept a little bit. They ate something sometimes because they had a material body that had to be taken, given some care. Not even the six Goswamis managed to live and continue their work without doing any eating, any sleeping. What to speak of them? We have to eat. We have to sleep. We don't have to have sex, but some think they have to have it. And fourth, defending. Okay, sometimes there's need to defend. If the deities are attacked, the other Vaishnavas are attacked, we become ferocious to defend. But just to defend our own ego, someone insults me with words, someone dares to find fault with me, and I become furious. That is unnecessary indulgence in defense. We don't need to defend our ego. The ego, we should be glad to have someone tear it to shreds. We should be thankful when someone attacks our false ego. We should be falling at their feet and thanking them. But no, we become defensive. So this is unauthorized, inappropriate indulgence in defense principle. When just because someone gets in my way of my plans and my ambitions, therefore he's my enemy. That's not letting Krishna be in control. Tatrako moha kakshoka atmana manupashyata. As described in the Isha Upanishad, if someone actually sees the presence of the Supersoul everywhere, which first of all means in every living heart, there is the presence of the Supersoul, then kamoha kashoka, how can someone feel confusion and lamentation? How can you be disturbed that so-and-so is doing such-and-such to me, or so-and-so is not doing what he's been told to do? You know, I'm doing it. I'm taking the trouble, and so-and-so and this one and that one aren't following the rules. And I become disturbed, seeing the weakness and discrepancies in others. But that's not Supersoul realization. If I see that that God is in the heart of even the ones who don't obey the law of God, but God is there in their heart, so I don't have to be the supreme judge. The supreme judge is already sitting in their heart. And there's other witnesses. Yamaraj talks about the 10 witnesses, the sun, the moon, the air, the stars, the directions. They're all seeing everything we do. So don't worry that so-and-so is doing nonsense and getting away with it. I got to take the trouble not to do the nonsense, and I get no benefit for it. I take the trouble, and so-and-so doesn't take the trouble, and he gets away with it. But he doesn't. Nobody gets away with it. Those 10 witnesses are seeing and recording everything everybody does. And the Supreme Judge, the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, is inside everyone's heart. Both the Dira and the Andira, the demigods and the demons, they all have Supersoul in their heart. So if I have Supersoul realization, what is being a Bhagawan realization? If I have simply Paramatma realization, then I have no reason to be disturbed. No lamentation, no excuse for lamentation, no excuse for confusion. Because I should understand that Paramatma is the supreme controller and he's witnessing everything. Justice will be done. I don't have to worry that there's injustice in the world, that evil is prospering. Let it seem to prosper, but the supreme soul will rectify everything in his own way. Everyone will be dealt with justly. Those who don't follow the sadhana properly in their devotional practice, they will fail to get the full benefit. And those who do follow, who follow the rules and regulations recommended to them by their spiritual authorities, by their gurus and appointed authorities, they'll get the full benefit. Justice will be done. No one will get away with doing nonsense. Even in spiritual life, there's the dynamics or a law of, let's say, retribution and karma also. In the material world, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. There's the physical law discovered by Newton of how physical bodies interreact, like a ball bouncing against a wall. What direction I throw it in and how hard I throw it, that's how hard it and what direction it bounces off in the opposite direction. Everything has an equal and opposite reaction. And then there's the law of karma, which is the same thing raised to the ethical platform. For living entities with free will, when they do good, they get good in the future. When they do bad, they get future bad reaction. Equal and opposite reaction. Well, that's the material realm. But the same kind of law also applies in spiritual practice, in the transitional methodology of devotional practice, sadhana bhakti. That is, that your not just sadhana bhakti, but all sadhanas, all spiritual disciplines. The sadhya that you attain is commensurate to your sadhana. What sadhana you do and how you do it determines what sadhya, what perfection you achieve. Better sadhana means better result. So that's the law of, let's say, sadhana karma. You know, you get what you put into it. What you put in to your sadhana is what you get out of it. So those who are lax, who are negligent, they'll get a lax, negligent result. And there's the justice. We don't have to worry about judging The weak devotees are unfortunate. Those who cannot take seriously the devotional service, they're unfortunate. They're less intelligent. We shouldn't feel that they're obstacles in our way, that they're polluting everything, they should be disposed of. They're the ones who should be saved. Where we go out in the street to preach to completely fallen living entities, and then in our ashram, we can't tolerate anybody who's imperfect. What is that? We preach to the outsiders, but we neglect the insiders, or we even consider them our enemies, someone to be disposed of. They should be cared for and encouraged. Encouraged. The weaker devotees should be encouraged. Everybody should be encouraged. A principle of behaving with Vaishnavas is always to be encouraging and never be discouraging. Look at Prabhupada. He was not a discourager. He would talk sharply sometimes. But he didn't have the effect usually of discouraging someone, of making someone just shrug his shoulders and walk away and give up. We should not do that. Otherwise, if we can't open our mouth without discouraging, better we don't open our mouth. Because our business is bhajanam. And we have to become, to actually do bhajana. Okay, we're already sitting here committed to the worship of Krishna. I don't think anybody here is you know, interested in worshiping some other god. That's not our problem. But our problem is to become anusuyava. This is we have to become very fixed up. You know, advance on the Majjhima platform, where we consider at least all the Vaishnavas our friends. God is our object of love. The Guru is equal to God, also our object of love. The devotees are our friends. And the innocent people, we have to go out of the way to help them. Take trouble to help the innocent, suffering souls. And those who are envious, we stay out of their way. They're potential enemies, and we don't want to be fighting with enemies. Let the Kshatriyas and the others fight with the enemies. But we're Vaishnava Brahmanas. And let the Paramahamsas transform the envious just by their effulgence. But we're just trying to be Madhyama Bhaktas. So we stay away from the envious and stay out of these quarrels. So others want to quarrel, let them. But we stay out of it. Yakaroti Samadhyamaha. That is a fixed-up devotee, and he has a hope to become anasuyu, non-envious. Asuya is the dhatu, to envy. That dhatu should be the object of our scrutiny. We have to look in ourselves for any symptoms of envy, of intolerance. We have to be tolerant. Trinada pisu nichena, taror iva sahishnuna. To feel smaller, to feel less significant than a blade of grass, and more tolerant than a tree who stands in all the weather and does nothing to protect himself. You know? Amanina manidena. Not expecting respect, honor from anybody, but ready to give respect to everybody. That's anasuyu, not envious. Our business is to strive for that. Then our puja can turn into bhajanam. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes, Paladnanda Prabhu. But the Supersoul sees it. Bhakti Devi sees it. Devotion is coming from above. It's the energy. It's the divine bhakti shakti. There are persons, powers, who are dispensing this shower of bhakti. And when they see that we are, when the powers that be, Krishna's shaktis, see that we are have a bad attitude against Krishna's other devotees, they are displeased with us. And the shower dries up. We don't get the flow of nectar. It's withheld because the powers that be are dissatisfied with us. Even though the devotee who we are offending just by thinking doesn't know anything about it. But the higher powers who are actually controlling the world of bhakti, they know and they respond. It's to correct us. The nectar's turned off, then we know for certain something's wrong. Then we have to look at ourselves and correct it, if we're smart. Otherwise, if we're stupid, we look at everybody else for the fault. Nectar's turned off, I'm dissatisfied, and I look around and find the fault in everybody else. Then I get in worse trouble. Then I commit more aparads. That we have to avoid. But if you feel the nectar being turned off, then look at yourself first for the problem. Yes? Well, what we need to do is simply stop feeling bad. Stop thinking that that devotee is your enemy. Learn how he's your friend. Then everything's corrected. But the recommendation is if you feel offensive against a Vaishnava, you should go out of your way to do some service for him. You know, then that will change your attitude. If you act as if you're the servant and do something, some service for that person, then that will change your attitude. There are practical ways to deal with it. Are you asking theoretically what's the reconciliation or how, what do you do to? Well, practically, you just act as a servant. Bow down, do some practical service, do something to please the person that you're dissatisfied with. That's a recommendation, if you can do it. Maybe you're so angry you can't do it. But if you can do it, do some service for that person. That's a practical solution. Theoretical solution is what I was talking about, that actually Krishna is in control and the witnesses see everything. Well, justice will be done. Don't worry about that. Okay, and then Dharmendra Prabhu, yes.
Thank you very much for this class.
Okay.
It's very relevant to me.
Thank you. Yes.
Practice a level, and I mean, we'll encourage you wherever your level is at. But if you want to take up the life of ashram, take the regulations of it. Like some ashrams are strict. They say if you're not able to follow this, then you cannot join our ashrams.
Well, okay.
And then I feel because okay, I'm not a true devotee. When somebody doesn't come to the program, it affects me because I'm thinking, well, we want to develop a nice team of Vaishnavas working together, and if a person is living in the ashram, then we want to work together in an ashram to save the whole world. But if the person in the ashrams themselves are weak and are not able to follow, then I feel like, how can we help?
Or if they just do the bare minimum to follow, you know, and just like, you know, on a low level of enthusiasm, and not feeling any compassion to do anything to help anybody else, then what? Nothing good happens. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right. You're right. In theory, you're right. In practice, it's a little complicated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ISKCON has not been able to attract ideal people because we don't have many ideal people in Kali Yuga. Most of the people out there, including the ones that become devotees, are damaged material. You know, they've suffered and done nonsense, and they're not perfect. So we don't have perfect candidates for our ashrams. We're dealing with Kali Yuga material. So we have to, yes, you have the right principle, but it has to be applied with some compassion. Each ashram is going to have a different character. And an ashram should have clear principles of what's allowed and what isn't allowed, and they should be enforced. My conception was that this be something that tries to evolve into a Brahminical ashram. And Brahminical community is we don't treat the members like Shudras. We don't, you know, manage them by intimidation and force, but by reason, by reasoning to them and appealing to their goodness. Maybe we've, you know, not succeeded so well because of that, because we're too lax. I don't know. Anyway, these things had to be discussed practically, and something you know, maybe something has to be done to correct it. I mean, the one thing that I've asked is that we take seriously is the principle of attendance, just to come to the programs. It hasn't been so bad in this semester. I've been keeping track. At least the students. I won't say about the staff, but the students at least have been attending fairly well. Maybe in the last week, it's starting to fall apart. It shouldn't. Our vacation's going to start soon. Those of us who are leaving early, but it doesn't mean everything should fall apart in the last 2 weeks. Yeah, you got a vacation coming up. It doesn't mean everything should stop before the vacation. Okay, we can discuss this further outside of class. Okay. Yes. Dermot Abreu had something. No. Okay. I'm sorry. I saw your hand. Okay. Okay. Sometimes, in some situations, that's what has to be done. I think it needs to be organized in an ashram situation. It has to be an institutional organization that there's some people who are responsible for discipline. If it's a Brahminical ashram, better you bring in a specialist, a person more in the mode of passion, to be the disciplinarian. Better the teacher role and the manager role are separated, and someone is positioned as the person to maintain discipline. We should have that, and then I think we'd be in better shape. Because it's not everybody's job
to impose discipline on everybody else. That's the way it was in the socialist countries. Everyone's looking at everybody else. You know, you walk into the building and the, what do you call that lady who's like the superintendent? No, but just in an apartment building. You walk in and this lady who takes care of the building, you know, gives you a BDI and, you know, complains if you push the button on the elevator the wrong way. Yeah. What do you call that lady? Just for an apartment building. You got some lady who's like the superintendent. Yeah. Gives you a hard time to everybody. Yeah. Okay, but we should have persons responsible for maintaining discipline. The rest of us can mind our own business. Well, you got to have some rajas in you. There are people who are lacking rajas. I'm one of those. You know, I've got, I don't know if any goodness, but I got a lot of ignorance in me, and I'm missing the middle mode mostly. Yeah. So I can't do it. I can't be a disciplinarian. I can't do it. If I do it, I simply degenerate immediately into the mode of ignorance. If I try to tell anybody what to do, I just get angry. Yes. Okay. You're talking about exemplary role models. Okay, well, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Okay, that's what we really need. Yeah. Well, it's better than nothing. Some ashrams have to be like that. But we're trying to avoid that. I'm sorry, I think Sanat Goswami had something. Okay, well, why don't we just let go, Swami, then get to you.
Sometimes people, even devotees, they do nonsense. For example, they...
Really? Really?
They let their guru and they leave the Bhagavad
Gita. Yes.
And in my humble opinion, it's not so
good. Yes.
You just made a statement. I don't understand these people. Or these people, they're not in the Srila Prabhupada.
Yes. What? Yes.
And for example, I saw one guy in pictures with he was like Babaji, and I just said I don't understand him because he's not in Prabhupada's mood. And devotees, some of them, they just try to teach me. They said, don't criticize him. He's a good person. He's Bhajanandi, etc., etc. And I was in such a awkward situation.
So you're simply saying there's something wrong because he's not following Prabhupada.
Yes. And my question is, where is an offense stopped?
That's not an offense.
Yes.
That's simply speaking the truth. You know, if people are foolish and you try to help them by speaking the truth, not in a harmful way, not in an envious way, but you just want to wake them up to the truth, that's your duty. It's your duty to do that, if they'll listen. You know, say it once, say it twice, and if they won't listen, just leave them alone. But not, you know, it's not nothing wrong, nothing offensive in the way you're talking about it. It simply point out that someone is not following Prabhupada and is ruining his life by doing that. I mean, you know, if somebody's walking in front of a car, is it an insult to yell at him? Someone's walking across the street and is about to be run over by a truck. Should you be polite and, not, you know, and only whisper to him and not shout? You know, is it an insult or an apparat to push that person out of the way or to yell at him? Get out of the way. So they're ruining their spiritual life by disobeying Prabhupada, by displeasing Prabhupada. We should warn them. If we don't, we're doing violence. And we don't warn them that we're doing violence. And if hundreds of devotees think that we're wrong, they're wrong. It's to do something in an attempt to serve Krishna, but it doesn't please Krishna. You know, it doesn't please the object of worship. Then it's aparad. It's backwards worship. It's backfiring worship. You attempt to worship, but you end up displeasing the deity. That's aparad. You do something in the attempt to serve that actually displeases the deity. That's aparad. Okay. Sure. Well, first of all, we have to maintain respect for the demigods. We, you know, in finding fault with the worshippers, we might also find fault with the deities. Then we're committing Vaishnava Parad. So that has to be avoided. We have to have respect for the demigods. Demigod worshippers, well, everybody deserves some respect. A person who is a human being should be treated like a human being. Even if he's a criminal, even a criminal has certain rights. The police arrest him and say, "You have a right to remain silent." You know, they tell him because it's the law. Even criminals have certain rights. So even a demigod worshiper deserves some respect. Yeah, but you don't always go to a foolish, less intelligent person and tell that to his face. You know, you say, "Dear sir, you're very intelligent, very smart, but can you give up this nonsense, please?" You know, you have to be tactful in dealing with foolish, you know, proud people. You know they're foolish and proud, but you don't always just, you know, insult them to their face because it won't have a good effect. Upadesha hi murkanam prokopaya nashantaye. Good instruction given to foolish people doesn't pacify them, it just makes them angry. What's the use of that? So we have to show respect, even if they don't deserve it. Show them more respect than they deserve, just to keep them from getting angry. Yes? But they don't engage in demigod worship. Because they consider them the greatest Vaishnavas. As Vaishnavas, not as separate deities. But even like they worship Ganesh, Hanuman, and Garuda. Hanuman and Garuda is the two highest deities. In the Sri Krishna temple, the side altars are Hanuman and Garuda. Two greatest Vaishnavas as far as they're concerned. But as Vaishnavas, not as, they don't worship them as God. That's the difference. Demigod worship, you're worshiping your deity as God. But if you're accepting the demigods as the best Vaishnavas, that's a different position. Well, we can argue that they're not. In general, they're not. That devotees like the gopis and even devotees like Prahlad, they're better devotees. That's a difference of opinion. Well, we take the truth to be objective. The gopis are the best devotees. But their reason is subjective. They have an inclination to the demigods. They're a demigod party. Madhvacharya himself is a demigod. So they're inclined toward the demigods. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Kijam.